Feeling lost and alone? Looking for validation from your partner, only to find the feeling of rejection and continued frustration? You're together yet so far apart. Now your frustration has turned into disdain and resentment. Your insecurities have begun to affect every aspect of your life. Ironically, you have now become the cold and detached one, shielding yourself from the uncertainties of your relationships. Dr. April Brown has created Bringing Intimacy Back, a series of discussions that are designed to help you reclaim what you have lost along the way. Dr. April will help you rediscover and reconnect to the intimate relationship your heart so desires. Go to www.bringingintimacyback.com today and let the healing begin.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we aim to help you increase the intimate connections with your significant other, children, family, friends, business network, community, and your higher power. We give you the secret power to intimacy, to create a life you love or love the life you create. Well, I would like to welcome you guys to today's show. On today's show, we are talking about addiction and intimacy, which is sometimes the other lover. My name is Dr. April Brown, and I would like to welcome my guest, Elizabeth Martin, who is specialized in addiction. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Yes, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this subject because especially during this pandemic, we've seen an increase in substance use disorders, and it's added to the other pandemic, so of addiction. So I thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Yes, I would love to tell you a little bit about Elizabeth. Elizabeth has been in the field for many years, and she spent a lot of time in doing inpatient psychiatric in dealing with addiction. She's also worked with the Federally Drug Court for Lake County. She's also a spiritual-based counselor. She works with Samaritans. She also works in my practice. And her areas of interest are addiction, substance use disorder, life skills, transition, anxiety, depressive disorders. And she really tries to help people find peace and meaning. As she says, as we're talking also today about today's pandemic. In her spare time, she loves to run, work out, do yoga, eat, and cook. And she's a mother, and she loves animals. So she's a mother of a rescue dog named Gisabella. And I guess she just adopted a little kitty cat named Sammy.
Exactly. Yes, during the pandemic. So I'm doing my part for clearing out the shelters.
Oh, yes. So since we're talking about the pandemic, how have you been doing in the last few months with this whole thing?
It's been a challenge, and I've been fortunate enough to be part of the panel that we had on previous sessions with talking about how to deal with the pandemic. It's been isolated for me, and that's, I think, been the hardest struggle to still try and feel connected while socially distancing and that type of thing. So I've relied on Zoom meetings, especially with my family. They all live out of state, and trying to just still remain connected that way. I did learn to cook a little bit more during all of this because quite frankly, out of necessity. So that was a new skill that I learned. And, but I do feel that the biggest struggle and challenge was just trying to remain connected and also positive. Basically, what can we learn from all of this? How can we become better people? And I think one of the best lessons I learned is just to be graceful with each other and ourselves, that we, have no control over this, and to, live in the moment and to be grateful for each and every day that we have, that we are healthy.
Right. Yes. And I do think many times people these days have been struggling with that. Yes. And I've seen in my practice, a lot of people are struggling with this and they're going toward addictions, which is kind of why I wanted to have you on the show to really talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. How did she, before we even get to talk about the addiction, how did you even started to specialize this, and what even made you even become a therapist in working with clients with substance?
That's a very interesting and kind of almost humorous question. I have a bachelor's degree in advertising from Michigan State University and had a successful almost 30-year career in healthcare sales and marketing. And I really loved that aspect of it, marketing hospitals and pharmaceuticals and diagnostic imaging. I was laid off of my job in 2006 or seven and wanted to go back to school to get my master's degree because my father was a teacher and he always encouraged education at any time of your life. Honestly, I started out to become a physician assistant. I was going to Hodges University to start my prerequisites to transfer to Nova, and the chemistry tripped me up. I had a hard time with it, so boom, I have to reevaluate. And at that point, they were initiating. It had been in, I think, 1 or 2 years, the mental health counseling program accredited at Hodges. And so I therefore transferred into the program, and the rest is history. I, you know, decided that sales and marketing was more about listening than talking. And so I, you know, thought this, I could parlay that into being a therapist, because that is what you do, you listen. So yeah, that was my route. And then I started working at Park Royal Hospital and enjoyed that, a lot of experience. The felony drug court really was where I found my passion for addiction. And so I, working with Salus Care, that really was, I found that I really enjoyed it. Not that I didn't before, but that kind of just put everything together for me. And that's basically how I kind of became interested in addiction. It's a family disease. It's a disease. And therefore, if it affects the family, and it also, it affects relationships as well, which is, you know, the intimacy portion of it. You know, it can break up marriages. And really, that's the other interest that I had, is to how to help couples, you know, navigate this disease of addiction.
Okay. And, so I'm curious, since you said it's a disease, what do you say to people? And it's not really a disease. A person is... choose to drink and choose not to drink and choose how much to drink.
The studies indicate that when we do develop an addiction, it does change the brain chemistry. The interesting thing about addiction is that two facts I wanted to actually bring up. The one is that when people experience early childhood trauma, 80% of those individuals typically develop some type of an addiction. The younger the person is starting their addiction, the harder it is to stop, because the brain, this is where the brain is still formulating, at least until 23 years old or 23, 24. And therefore, the brain remembers the feel good effect of the substance. And that's why it makes it harder for, you know, individuals to stop their addiction the younger they start. It does. They've done the MRI studies. They've looked at areas of the brain that light up during, you know, certain substances, especially cocaine. And they can see that there is this areas of the feel-good center of the brain is what is stimulated. And therefore, some people don't think that it's a disease. I myself, as a clinician, feel that it is a disease. Like mental illness can be co-occurring, and so I look at it as treatment for a disease.
Okay. So it's brain. So I'm curious, does that also have a lasting impact, that it also changes it in the sense of genetics?
Okay. You know,
Ken, if your family member was addicted, you know, your grandfather and stuff, is there a chance that you may...
I see what you're saying. There is a propensity, I believe, for when there's a family history of addiction and mental illness, for you know, people to possibly develop an addiction. Also, you know, it's environmental versus, you know, genetic. There's still, you know, people, we still can, you know, talk about that, and there's still controversy about that as well. I believe that there's a connection.
Okay. You've been saying addiction, addiction, addiction. So what is really an addiction? Is it, you know, drinking one glass of wine every night? What is an addiction?
An addiction is a behavior with a substance that impacts the activities, I think, of daily living for, you know, behavior that's dangerous to the person or to others. So by that, I mean, some people can, you know, regulate and have one glass of wine and they're fine. Other people, it starts a chain of reactions that they just cannot stop the behavior. You know, there's this dependency. There's, you know, if we're speaking about alcohol, dependency, binge drinking, you know, there's different types of addiction, you know, with alcohol, but it is, you know, the basic, I think, definition is not, you know, is that it causes behavior that could be dangerous to themselves or others. And when you cannot stop this type of behavior, you know, that's when we become dependent or addicted.
That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. So my next question is, I know that sometimes people say that, well, I don't drink every day. You know, like you talked about the binge drinking, yeah, that I only get wasted, you know, on weekends or whatever. So is that still an addiction because it's not every day?
Well, again, it is the, you know, if it's causing a loss of control over some things, then yes, that could be considered an addiction.
Okay.
You know, other signs of addiction can be, you know, social or occupational problems, loss of control over the substance use, for instance, in binge drinking, risky use, and also the physical effects. Even though a person may only be binge drinking once a week, they build a tolerance to that. Mm-hmm. And so those are the physical effects of what would be a sign of addiction. Also withdrawals if you stop using the substance and you have these physical. So I think those are the signs to watch out for to, you know, look, you know, determine if you do have an addiction or not, or you think that you do.
Right. Okay. And the title of our show today, you have a title as The Other Lover, Addiction and Intimacy. What exactly does that mean when we talk about relationships?
I chose that specific title because a very wise doctor talked to me about the fact that addiction can be the other lover. And okay. I believe that was Dr. Brown. And so I thought about that when I was doing couples counseling and working with couples and intimacy. The thing is that if the addicted person puts their addiction before the person, the significant other, that becomes the other lover. For instance, if a husband is working hard and stops at the bar every night on the way home, in the olden days when we could do that, and before coming home to see his wife, that becomes his priority. That becomes the other, that becomes the lover. The love of the substance, whether it's stopping to have the alcohol or, you know, snorting some lines of coke while you're working and then coming home to your wife, whatever it is. But it's that actual making that decision to choose the substance over your partner. And that's what I call that as the other lover.
Okay, yes. And I've actually seen it in practice many times where a person who is addicted, you know, they get so involved with their substance that they push away their lover or they push away their partner. You know, they don't talk to them or they get in a big argument and then so they completely shut down. So it definitely, I can see you know, how it is another mm-hmm. lover. Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about intimacy and addiction and what to look out for and different signs and how to help a person who is addicted or even as a partner, how to help yourself if you're in that situation.
The Bringing Intimacy Back show is in search of some special couples for our September 2020 lineup. We are seeking couples who are willing to be open and honest about two particular topics. One of the shows is stories from couples who have survived having different political views over the years. The second show is stories from couples who have survived infidelity and how they are doing now. If you would like to be a guest on the show, we would love to have you. Please email us at bringingintimacyback@drapelbrown.com.
Right, welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy show, where intimacy is real. Today's topic is addiction and intimacy, the other level, with guest Elizabeth Martin, who is a mental health counselor who focuses on addiction. So one of the things we were just talking about is how addiction can become an other lover. It can impact intimacy. Yes, yeah. How have you dealt with if you're, because many people are listening and they're saying maybe they're in a relationship and they have a partner who is struggling.
Struggling with addiction?
With addiction, okay. Yes.
So what? How to be supportive, how to, how to work together as a couple.
How do you even bring the subject up?
The first thing is recognizing when you think possibly your partner may have an addiction. Sometimes it's really hard to tell. I have worked with couples that had no idea that their partner had an addiction, like 2 or 3 years or whatever. So I think the first thing is to, recognize if you suspect your partner has an addiction or you see that they're drinking too much or something like that. It's a very difficult conversation to have.
What do you look out for?
Well, for instance, with alcohol, you can look out for slurred speech, red eyes, smelling it on them, those type of symptoms. For instance, opiate use, kind of the opposite. A little bit of slurred speech, but slower body movements. A lot of times people will just fall asleep sitting in a chair if they're very high on opiates, that type of thing. Cocaine is the opposite. We can have, hyped up hyperverbal speech, jitteriness, walking around, that type of thing. Methamphetamines probably present the same way. So I think, doing a physical assessment of your partner, with alcohol, a lot of times people hide their alcohol. You may find alcohol bottles, under the sink or, in a drawer of the dresser or something like that. So a lot of deceit is associated with addiction. So when you first have this, again, it's going to be a very difficult conversation to have with a partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because many times I'm assuming your partner may get defensive about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that is typically something that does happen, obviously. The other thing to be aware of is how to effectively communicate, what your desire is, using I statements, concentrating on what the actual situation is and not the person. I'm concerned about your how much you're drinking. I'm concerned that our there's massive withdrawals out of the checking account. They're going out to buy their substance and that type of thing. Yes, that probably more than likely it will be met with resistance. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the five stages of change with addiction, and that kind of couples with this conversation. You know, when you're talking to someone about addiction, there are five stages that the person, the addict, will be going through. And so no matter if the first one is pre-contemplation stage, and that's to talk about that's when the person really is in denial, is when they're in pre-contemplation. So when you start to have this conversation, that's probably what's going to happen. They're in pre-contemplation. They probably know in their heart that they may have, you know, a substance use disorder, but they're still pre-contemplating that. So that's stage number one. Number two is the contemplation stage, where they're a little ambivalent about their change. So if you happen to start this conversation with an addict or someone that has an addiction, they're going to be in either one of those stages. When you're going to see any type of change in that behavior is if they're in the third stage, which is the preparation stage. You know, they've decided to change their behavior. So maybe the first time you have this conversation with somebody, your significant other, they're like, nope. But you're planting the seed. You are helping them, you know, move into the next stage.
Okay, I'm curious, is that when you go and you approach your partner, should you do it by yourself or do it like the interventions that we see on TV with big groups of people and family and all that?
Good, very interesting question. I think probably the best answer would be with your partner. I would suggest the first conversation be one-on-one. You know, that probably, you know, is the place to start. Now, can interventions be successful? Yes, they can. But first, I would suggest approaching the partner yourself one-on-one, talking about your concerns, you know, offering support, how we can get help, and that type of thing. I know that, you know, if there have been, you know, situations where family members, you know, after they've had one person talking or whatever, they come together to do that intervention, to, you know, again, the person needs to be in stage three, the preparation stage, to make any type of change. And then,
as partner, is there anything that a partner can do to get that partner to that preparation stage? Is there any?
Well, again, if you, as the supportive partner, possibly talking about, you know, the effects that it has on the family, because this is a family disease, and the effects that it's having on the relationship. So being able to, you know, parlay it back into how it's affecting the relationship between the husband and wife, and then also the family. With people in addiction, they have to be in that stage of change to even start to make the change with the behavior. You know, then we also could talk about, you know, once people, you know, go to detox, or, you know, start to get, you know, help with their addiction, how to, you know, help them stay clean and sober, you know, relapse prevention techniques that you can do as a support system for your significant other. But again, then, you know, if there's a relapse involved, you know, there's a whole nother conversation that can come up. So, you know, I'm trying to kind of zero in on the answer to this question, but it depends on, you know, how many times a person may have tried to stop their addiction. There's many aspects that come into play when, you know, after you have this conversation and where they're at to change.
Yeah, is relapse, you mentioned relapse. What is a relapse and how common is it?
With relapse is when a person who, after they've made all their changes, they return to their previous problem behavior, whether it's the drinking or the snorting of the coke. So that's what a relapse is. You know, people can be in recovery for many years and have a relapse if they get triggered by something like that. That can be really difficult on the person that is in recovery when they relapse. So sometimes, depending on, for instance, if somebody was in recovery for, 10 years and they went out and had one drink and said, oh no, I have to get back, into my recovery, we may consider that a lapse, not a relapse. So I like to be very specific with my clients when, if they went out and they started drinking, a 12-pack every day for the next month, that's a relapse. So it depends, to me, on the intensity and how much of the substance they're using between the relapse and the lapse.
Wow, okay. Interesting. Oh, yeah. And so as I'm listening to that, and I know we have people out there who have partners who may be struggling. If you're hearing this and you feel like you're addicted, how can I put it? How can you say to your partner, hey, this is what it is, without feeling judged?
I think that depending on the type of relationship you have, if this is the 10th time you've come to your partner and said, hey, I want to stop using or drinking, you might get a different response. If you're talking about the first time that, your partner comes to you and says, listen, I have an addiction and I would like to have some help. I think that, being supportive means that you are, cognizant of their addiction and how you can help them. Now, there are many things that you can do. Again, first of all, being in the action stage of change is really going to be important because that means they're motivated to make that change. They may be coming to you in pre-contemplation. I'm thinking maybe I have a problem, but I really don't want to stop doing my thing right now, but I just kind of wanted to give you the heads up. Well, you can say to them all you want, oh, you need to do this, you can do that. But if they're not ready to make that change.
How do you know that change? How do you know?
When they start to think about how they want to make the change and perhaps, going to detox, getting in contact with support groups. Celebrate recovery, the 12 steps, talking about that, how, and getting together a plan actually to help them, which would be any type of support, like group support. 12 step groups are great, but they're not for everybody. So having a plan is really important. First of all, creating an atmosphere of, trust and intimacy, for the patient to feel comfortable, or for the addicted person to feel comfortable opening up that conversation with their significant other. I think having a plan is, the next thing. Holding that person responsible if they want to make that change. For instance, having them attend, you can even attend support group meetings with them. They have Zoom meetings now. Getting a sponsor, I think, is a really key element for people. Someone that they are held responsible for when they, feel like they're being triggered to use their substance, they can call this person or text them. And so that's really key, to maybe have them go to detox. Typically with alcohol, it's very important that you detox properly. You can have seizures and die from detox. Yes. Yeah. Alcohol and opiates are the two substances that you need to be very careful when you are weaning off of them or stopping them, because you can, they can be fatal if you don't detox correctly. So I would be wanting to make sure that if you have a significant other that, or loved one that's coming to you with either one of those addictions, depending on, how much they're using, be very careful on how you have them wean off of that or stop using it. The support groups, and have a plan. We have relapse prevention plans that we talk about. You can talk with them about what triggers them to use their substance. That's really, really important to figure out what it is. Is it stress in the relationship that's triggering them? You know, financial, you know, with everybody, you know, a lot of unemployment and things like that going on right now, to really talk about what is that trigger, so that we can make some behavioral changes, modifications, so that they, when they start to feel triggered, they're not going to pick up that cocktail or snort that line, pop an oxy. So we're aware of what that is.
Okay, yeah. One of the things you said is about that they have to really go and start figuring out the plan and what kind of treatment options. As a couple, if your partner is wanting you to go figure out where you should go, you know, and you're trying to do all this stuff, figuring out what the counselor is, what the AA meet are, is that person
ready to make the change?
Right. You helping?
Yeah. Are you enabling them or are you supporting them? I think
right, exactly.
That's the question. Being supportive, again, to me, it's how many times you've tried to, you know, to stop your addiction. Being supportive the first time around, probably, you know, helping with the counseling situation, talking about a 28-day treatment, working together on coming up with this plan is probably really important, being supportive of that. And, you know, many couples are successful when, you know, they work together like that. Now, I have worked with couples that, you know, this is like the 20th time somebody has relapsed. Are you going to be so, you know, enthusiastic about helping them find all these things? Maybe not. But so I think that's kind of an interesting question, because it depends on, you know, where they're at in their, you know, how their substance use disorder, how many times they may have tried to stop before. Lots of variables come into play with that question. But being supportive is, you know, helping them, you know, or helping them get to that next stage of between preparation and action. Enabling would be they come out of rehab and you say, hey, let's go have a cocktail. You can, you know, if they, you know, if they're in the 28-day treatment and they say after 7 days, I don't want to be here, I can't stand it here, you got to get me out of here. That could be enabling if you say, okay, I'll see what I can, if I can get you out. So if you're doing a type of behavior that isn't helping them stay in recovery, that's probably more enabling them than supporting them.
Okay. And like you said earlier, there are some support groups to help partners who struggle with even kind of knowing what to do in those situations, such as
there are support groups that help the partner. The SAMHSA, Substance Abuse Mental Health Service Addiction Hotline, is a great resource. You can go on the website or you can call them, and they have
SAMHSA's hotline.
Yeah, it's 1-800-662-4357.
Okay.
And they have all types of like family support, even, you know, counselors in the area that work with addiction, you know, how facilities to get treatment, all types of, you know, resources available. That would be the place that I would go. It's kind of one-stop shopping. It's going to give you answers to a lot of different, you know, questions that you might have as far as how to help somebody with an addiction.
Okay. So in this pandemic, what have you been seeing with addictions? Has it gone down or up, or what's been going on?
Well, the one thing I did want to mention when I went to do some research about this is that during this pandemic, many countries deemed alcohol and tobacco as essential commodities. So,
Wow, okay. Yes.
So that in and of itself is very interesting to me that, you know, everything else is being closed down, but we, you know, tobacco and, you know, alcohol are essential commodities. So,
but they have closed down bars in some places.
They have closed down bars, but you still are able to, you know, a lot of places were selling the alcohol outside of the bar. You could just pop by in and get the alcohol. So there were kind of people getting creative, obviously, on how to still stay in business and living. But to me, that says a lot. You know, we are, you know, a country that, you know, alcohol is probably the number one substance use or substance people misuse because it's so readily available.
Right.
So during this pandemic, I think that people that that have addictions were already marginalized. That, you know, like how are we going to continue to stay in our recovery when we can't go to our support group meetings and that type of thing? So, you know, they were already facing challenges to stay in recovery. That's one group. That's one. The other trend I noticed was that people working from home, now we're day drinking. We're, you know, so instead of coming home from work at 7 o'clock at night, we're popping that beer or pouring that glass of wine maybe 4 in the afternoon. So I do feel that the trend is that, you know, more people may be developing some type of substance use disorder because of this pandemic. And also people that are in lots of relapses. I've had, you know, clients, you know, contact me that, yes, they're relapsing because of the stress, because of being isolated, many challenges that are triggers for them. And so there have been numerous increases in relapses as well.
Okay. Is there help out? Or, you know, we hear a lot in the news about opiates. Yes. And for a lot of us, we're like, wow, this is scary stuff. And when you're living with it.
Right. Very good question. The opiate epidemic has obviously has not decreased during this pandemic. They're calling that epidemic and the COVID-19 two epidemics that are kind of colliding together. So, but there are, again, being careful about how you detox off of opiates is very, very important because, again, if it's not done correctly, there is a potential for fatal. The second thing is the heroin that was, you know, out in the street, you know, laced with the fentanyl and that type of thing, that, you know, we're still kind of battling that ground. And also, fentanyl is showing up in other substances as well, such as cocaine. People are just having overdoses due to cocaine laced with fentanyl. So it's infiltrating in other substances as well. You know, with there are support groups, NA support groups, Narcotics Anonymous, getting a sponsor. Again, there are there's resources available. In Fort Myers, Lee County, there are, you know, lots of different support groups. You can go online and do that type of thing. The other thing I wanted to mention about the opiates is medically assisted treatment. And, you know, we talk about the Suboxone, we talk about the Subutex, but also there's an oral naltrexone, which is a tablet, which is very economical as a support for medically assisted treatment for people that want to recover off of opiates. You have to be clean for 7 days before you can start the prescription, but it has been clinically proven it helps with the cravings. So if the client doesn't have the cravings to use the substance, then, you know, it helps with that. And naltrexone is also used for alcohol addiction. So clinically proven and studied for both alcohol and for opiates. There is still controversy with medically assisted treatment. Are you substituting one substance for the other? So a lot of the support groups like AA you're going to have differing opinions on whether or not that's truly the patient's in recovery if they're using medically assisted treatment. So just be aware that it's still controversial, but it is effective for clients. I had a successful client here at Samaritan, almost a year sober, being on naltrexone. So it's successful for clients.
Right. Another topic that they seems to always be in debate, if you're addicted to something, if you're in recovery, you cannot have a relationship.
Okay. So
sometimes people say they don't want to enter recovery because they don't want to leave their marriage, or should they enter recovery and just say, you know.
Yes. And again, that if you're already in a marriage, yes, of course you have that relationship, and hopefully that person is being supportive and helping you with that. A lot of marriages and relationships end when people go to recovery, or they say, you know, the ultimatum is, okay, either you go to recovery or I'm leaving, you know, so that type of thing. Now, when people are in early recovery, if they were not involved in a relationship before they went into recovery, especially with Alcoholics Anonymous, it's highly suggested that you do not enter into a new relationship within 12 months, because of the fact that you're making lots of changes. And so, that might be, what people are hearing is if not entering into a new relationship, being really careful about that. With an established relationship, of course, the significant other or husband or wife, typically they would offer support. Again, depends on how many times a client's been in and out of the recovery.
Okay, but not into a new relationship. Or what are the thoughts about if you meet a great person in rehab who's struggling the same way you are?
Okay. We call those rehab romances. And typically, they don't tend to have a happy ending. However, I can't, it's highly suggested that if you're in early recovery, do not enter into a new relationship. You're already going to be having challenges and struggles and things like that for yourself and all the changes that you're making. Entering, in a new relationship with someone else who's also in recovery, early recovery, it's really probably not, like I said, going to have a happy ending or a good outcome. I mean, it can happen, but typically it's not advised. Really people need to work on themselves and get themselves healthy so they can have a healthy relationship. It does happen. I've seen it. Again, we have romances. Like I said, it's probably pretty difficult to make it, a successful relationship.
Okay, all right. We're going to take a short break, and in our break, Elizabeth will tell us a little bit about herself and what she's going to offer. And then when we come back, Elizabeth is going to share with us in those relationships where you guys are already married and it's a committed relationship, what are some tips to help improve intimacy if you're struggling with addiction? So, Elizabeth, tell us what you have to offer.
Well, I have a private practice, and I do offer being part of the sponsor type role when my clients in my private practice are being triggered or feel that they, are going to relapse. I encourage them to call me to reach out to myself or their sponsor. So I do offer kind of a concierge type scenario with my private practice and being able to help a client navigate, the resources that are available, the stages of change, and coming up with a pretty solid relapse prevention plan, helping them recognize triggers, helping them recognize the stressors, and how to, put that all together to keep them in recovery and keep them sober and clean. At Samaritan, we offer the medically assisted treatment here. I work closely with our practitioners to help clients when they want to become clean and sober to have access to the medically assisted treatment. And we have really great providers that will work with the client with that as well. Also to be able to, I'm connected in the recovery community with the sober living houses, with other people that are, really active in the recovery world to, again, help the client become, substance free and stay in recovery. And whatever we can do, we have dedicated individuals, myself and others, that can really, really put a tight plan together once the patient is motivated for that change. Again, I have to stress, they have to be in that stage of change to want to make those changes and to move forward with that plan.
Awesome. So, Elizabeth, how can people get in contact with you?
They can reach me at my private practice, which is Advanced Counseling of Fort Myers. That telephone number is 239-671-7619. I do have a Facebook page with my Advanced Counseling, so that's on Facebook as well. At Samaritan Health and Wellness, we are located on Cape Coral Parkway in Cape Coral, and that number is 239-257-3094. I can do individual therapy at Samaritan and also at Advanced Counseling with the Cape Coral Therapist office there in the Cape. And also, I have a support group here at Samaritan on Tuesday evenings called Sober Journey. And it's a group of, dedicated people that want to stay in recovery. We talk about, different types of, relapse prevention and that type of thing. So I have that group going on as well.
Okay. Thank you. So going back into this last part, which is our toolbox part of the show, as a specialist and as a therapist, how can you provide us or can you provide us some tips? First, for the one who's struggling with addiction, how to help in the sense of intimacy and connection with their partner. And then second, for the partner, and then as the couple as a whole. Okay. What tips do you have?
For the person that's struggling with addiction, it's really important to be honest with your partner and to let them know when you're struggling, because that is what's going to help you be successful and staying in in your recovery. Reaching out to your partner. I did provide the phone number for SAMHSA, because they have really good resources. There are many, detox, facilities here. There are 28-day programs that, if you want the help and you reach out, you are going to be able to be connected with appropriate resources. So again, first, it's about, help, asking for that help, and that's okay. When we ask for help, that's a sign of strength. Hopefully you'll be in the relationship, the intimate relationship with someone that is going to want to offer that support and, help you through that process. If you're the partner of someone that has an addiction, again, depend, that it gets a little bit trickier at that point to, be supportive, offer, like we talked about earlier, working with, finding counselors and, facilities and things like that, offering that type of support. It can get a little tricky if they've been down this road, multiple times. That's where difficulty starts to appear. How do you to be supportive but not enabling? That's the fine walk that's kind of hard to walk, but it can be done. Helping them stay in recovery, If they don't want to be around people that are, you know, drinking, don't invite people over to have cocktails. I mean, you are also, as the partner, may have to make some changes too, but that's being supportive. So, be cognizant that you yourself may have to make a few changes in the beginning of the recovery to help your partner. And if your partner is making those decisions that stopping at the bar is more important, that's a red flag in that your relationship, because it's bringing us right back to that other lover. That seems to be their priority is the substance. There's groups available for partners that have addicted partners. There's resources available in Lee County. A lot of Stateless Care has support groups. I have the support group here. It's just a matter of reaching out and looking to see what the options are and what the resources are. But addiction is such a big part of the mental illness. And so we have a lot of resources out there because it's becoming such an epidemic in our country. And of course, everyone deserves to get help, whether or not you have, a mental illness or an addiction. It's an illness, and you deserve to get help and to feel better and to not be judged and have this stigma that seems to be attached to a lot of these things. I think that's why people don't reach out. So as a partner of a loved one that has an addiction and yourself the addicted person, remember that, there are people here to help, and we want you to get better. We want you to get healthy.
Okay. Do you have any tips as a couple, as a whole?
Again, being supportive for each other, being, graceful, knowing that people are, doing the best that they can. Going to meetings together, if that's what it takes. There are different types of recovery meetings. Celebrate Recovery is more religiously based and faith-based. There's the 12-step programs as well. They are spiritually based with the higher power. I think finding a program and a plan that works for both of you to help show support and to help, the addicted individual know that they're going to be able to walk through this recovery with their partner, whether it's attending meetings together, getting the sponsor. And know that it may take time. A lot of people relapse. They don't always make the change the first time around. So maybe making sure that as the partner and as the couple, that you know that you may be going through this process more than once or twice. But being patient and know that, people are hurting and that they, there's a lot of shame and guilt associated with addiction. And I think maybe that's the other part of why people maybe don't come to their partner when they're addicted. And so being able to work with all of these emotions that both of you are going to be having, a lot of resentment and anger on the part of the person that's not addicted. Know that your system may be working like this for now, but when one individual starts to get better, it kind of throws that system off. So you're going to have to learn how to communicate, how to have that intimacy when one person starts to get better. So that's the other thing that, as couples, I think those are the challenges as well.
Right, right. One thing that we really haven't talked about, but you kind of basically said, as a partner, you cannot enable. And there are going to be, I'm going to assume, some partners out there who have done everything. And it's affecting their kids. And it's affecting themselves. And they're debating whether they should just throw in the towel.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hard thing.
Yes, and again, it all depends on, you know, the dynamics of your relationship, how many times, you know, your partner may have tried to get clean and sober, how old the children are. There are many, many, this is such a hard question to, you know, even a hard situation to talk about, that, you know, a lot of variables depend on, you know, depending on that, you know, yeah, it's a family.
Yeah. Yeah, I would suggest to definitely seek out counseling, you know, to work through all that. Yes. Thank you, Elizabeth, so much for being on the show.
Thank you. It was nice.
Anybody out there, like, listening and they want to connect with you, the phone number is, what, 239-671-7619?
Yep.
Yes, yes. And you can find her on social media. On Facebook through Advanced Counseling Fort Myers, LLC. She's also on the Cape Coral Therapist website if you want to check her out for counseling service. And she's also there. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. If you would like to see more about Bringing Intimacy Back, check out our website at Bringing Intimacy Back. And you can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, Spotify for past shows. Thank you.
Thank you very much.